Come along and join associate producer and your host, Melissa Corbin, reporting from Nebraska, where she visits with the Sandhill Cranes.
Today we'll be exploring the culinary preferences of a whole other species, the Sandhill Crane. You see, each spring, nearly 80% of the world's population of sandhill cranes concentrate along Nebraska's Platte River Valley. This is a threatened habitat in North America's central flyway, but the birds are in search of a few mid-migration meals. Last March, more than 500,000 of the birds roosted right before my very eyes at the Audubon Rose Sanctuary in Gibbon, Nebraska. It was just before daybreak when volunteer guide Rob Allsweet checked to make sure my gear didn't light up and spook the birds. We attached a few mics to the primitive blind upon which I would roost with the birds, and then I waited. As the sky turned the most rosiest of hues, and as far as I could see, there were a blanket of hunkered-down sandhill cranes. Oh, there was no mistaking their chatter of conversation. I'm not fluent in the native tongue of sandhill crane speak. Oh, I'm pretty sure I heard a few mama birds checking with their kids to make sure they tied their shoes and put on their coats for the long ride ahead of them. Then it happened. It was almost as if the flight captain hopped on the loudspeaker and declared, "Prepared for takeoff." Just like that, off they flew. Y'all, I gotta tell you, there's nothing like the sound of nearly 500,000 large birds taking flight all at once. Oh, it's a deeply moving experience, to say the least. So, it's no wonder that the likes of renowned ornithologist Ann Goodall attends this annual ornithological reunion. As I gained my composure, Rob joined me for a morning walk along a cornfield where some of the cranes were foraging for breakfast. Listen in as we talk about the crane's journey, why they're at rest, and how you can help. We've been watching the migration of the sandhill cranes. So Rob knows a lot more about this than anybody I think I know. So Rob, tell me a little bit about what we've seen and what people can expect when they come here.
Well, what we've seen this morning, the birds roost in the river overnight, we think for their protection from predators. And they come in numbers in the evening, find a place to stay, and tuck their head under their wing and sleep. And there's always a little bit of sound going on because there are sentries out there. When we came to the blind this morning, it was really pretty quiet on the river, but there was still chatter. And then as the sun comes up and the day dawns, the birds usually filter off the river and head for the fields to feed. Mm-hmm. And the main reason for being here is there's lots of food, and they spend about a month here gaining weight, getting fat for their migration, which is a long migration. Some of these birds fly more than 4,000 miles one way. These birds nest north of the Arctic Circle, anywhere from Hudson Bay in eastern Canada all the way into Siberia, a lot in Alaska and in the Northwest Territories, that sort of thing.
When will they come back to this area?
Next spring. When they go south, when they can return south for the winter, they most normally will just fly right on by. The reason for that is they know there's food where they're going. It's going to be warm, and so there's no reason to stay here on the way back south. But once in a while, they'll come and use the river or adjacent fields for a day or two. But mostly it's just wave as they go by.
Wave as they go by. Yeah, and their little feet are tucked up underneath them. And I guess
right.
I shouldn't say little, because they're pretty large birds.
Their feet are their, besides their bill, their feet are their best weapon for protection.
Oh, well, tell me a little bit about that. So what are they protecting against?
Well, a lot of times it's just fighting among each other. And there's the old struggle to see who gets who for a mate. And then once they've paired up with another crane, there's the struggle to, you know, keep their mate safe and keep their bond together. And if someone's encroaching, they will threaten them, and if they still come, then they'll chase them off. And one of the ways they do is to jump at them, strike them with their feet. Their claws are really sharp.
And they're pretty massive birds. About what size bird are we talking here?
Well, probably 4 foot tall. Their wingspan is more than 6 foot. But that's generally it. They're a little 6-pounder. 6-pound bird, just like having a laying hen with 6-foot wings, is about the size of them.
So we're walking past this field, headed back up to the visitor center. Clearly there's been some corn or whatnot that's been harvested here.
Yeah, this happens to be a cornfield. The next one's a bean field. But 80% of their diet when they're here on the Platte River Valley is corn now. Historically, of course, there wasn't corn here. And they ate a lot of native grass seed, which native grasses seed heavily. A lot more invertebrates, worms and snails and that sort of thing. Most of these cornfields would have been wet meadows, kind of a swampy kind of area, but they've all been drained to use for agriculture. But there's still some remnant places where they can gather the proteins that they need and the calcium that they need for egg production.
So they're herbivores?
They are carnivorous.
Okay.
Omnivores.
Omnivores.
Yeah, they more than the whooping crane is actually a carnivore.
Uh-huh.
They didn't know that until several years ago, but these guys, the sandhill cranes, will use meat as protein and other plant materials for protein. So
they go fishing.
They do not eat fish.
No.
It's interesting. They spend all the night in the river, but they're not there to get the fish. They're there for protection. But what they find in the fields, anywhere from snakes down to worms and snails.
But no puppy dog tails.
Not that we know of. Not that we know of. They will attack a puppy dog if it comes to them.
That was what I was going to ask. So are coyotes and that kind of thing, are they predators?
You betcha. That's one of the reasons we think that they use the river to roost. To stay away from them. They can hear them if they're walking through the water, approaching, that sort of thing.
So you said that they didn't fish, but this morning we noticed they obviously were sitting there in the Platte River, and it's shallow there, of course.
Right.
So the birds are sitting there. They have no other place to go to the bathroom, of course. So, with that being said, there's all these fish in the Platte River. Tell me a little bit about the ecosystem of the river.
Well, the Platte is a braided river, which means it's a wide river, and the channels move the sand and create sandbars here, there, and then water comes up and moves that sand, and it just kind of always changes. The Platte River used to be, well, those trees down there are where the South Channel was.
Okay.
And that hasn't flowed with water for 15 years because there's just not that much water left in the river. But between that channel and the North Channel, which is beyond what we've been seeing, the river just moved across this valley depending on water flow, the time of year. And even now where we've cleared the river, the channel will change. One of our blinds downstream is now a couple hundred yards from the edge of the river. And it used to be right on the river's edge, like the blind we were in today.
So with everything, environment affects all of us.
You bet.
What would you say is the future for the sandhill crane?
It totally depends on what we as humans do with the river and the water flow. The water you saw on the river today is a mere 30% of historically what would have been here at this time of year. With the major dams for agriculture and human consumption have pulled 70% of the water away from the river. And it's whether or not we can keep the river flowing in a way that it's still usable by the cranes will be probably our greatest challenge.
Mm, yeah, that's interesting. So as a human being, what's the number one thing that we can do to help protect our environment for the sandhill cranes to flourish?
Just not use any water.
Or at least conserve, yes?
That's right. And find ways to be better users that way.
Yeah.
We ask our friends in Colorado, when they use the bathroom, we ask them to flush twice. Because that brings a greater flow down the river.
Oh, really?
Well, you know.
There you go. So What is the Rose Sanctuary doing to help this cause?
Well, first of all, we're putting together acres so we have a base to work from. But the main thing that we do here is we control invasive species as best we can that take water from the river and that choke the channels. We clear the channels of native species that take root because the water flow is not great enough to displace it and flush it out. And making sure that there is a wide enough channel at the proper depth so that the cranes will make use of it. Because they need about 150 yards of clear view. And if they don't have that, they're not comfortable using the river and will be forced into another area, which means they're going to be more crowded. And you have other issues then that come up with the crowdedness of the birds.
Yes. So we're walking along this path. We're almost up to the sanctuary. This afternoon, the birds will be flying back.
Correct.
And about what time does that begin?
Well, they'll start moving toward the river, but not onto the river, about sundown. And they start coming back into the river just before dark. And it's always disappointing for our visitors, first-time visitors, because they expect them to be coming into the river in bright light so they can take photographs and really get good views. But many times it's almost dark when they start coming to the river. And then they continue coming in until well after dark.
So it's not necessarily the reverse process.
Well, it is in a way. But what they do in the afternoons, they'll come to what we call secondary roosts, which are meadows and fields next to the river, but not on the river. A lot of socializing occurs there. A lot of chatter, a lot of dancing, and we think pair bonding, that sort of thing. When they decide it's time, they come over the trees, go back and forth a couple times, find a place they like, and sit down.
So are cranes monogamous?
Yes. They generally mate for life. They have a lifespan of 20 to 30 years, somewhere in there. I would think the average is more like 22 or 23. And they mate for life, but if they're not successful mating, they will break up and go find somebody else. If one dies, the remaining bird will try to find another one to mate with. And there's evidence now that we've been tracking them a little more closely. There's evidence not only of divorce,
really,
but a little sleeping around going on.
Really? So we got some little philanderer cranes, huh?
The male will take off and go visit another female, or vice versa, as they say.
I see. Just like in humans, we all want to be with someone and be liked, right?
That sounds about right. At least we may be giving them a little more anthropomorphic traits than we should, but that's what it appears to be.
Well, it has been a Nebraska nice kind of morning visiting
really
with
is.
You. Where can people find the Rose Sanctuary? What's the best way for them to experience what we just experienced?
Well, if you're not here physically, you can. If the internet's available to you, we have a crane camera that runs all year round, morning and night. And you go to rosesanctuary.org, and somewhere on the website will be a place to click on the crane cam, and it should come up and show you what's happening here. We man it in the morning and the evening when the birds are leaving and coming to the river, so that if something interesting, more interesting than just looking, is going on, you'll be able to access that. And it also gives you a chance, like I live in Olympia on the northwest coast, and I'll just check the crane cam during the day just to see what the river's doing.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably won't see any birds when you do that, but it gives you a good connection with Rose Sanctuary. All the money that we use here for all these projects is raised here. National Audubon doesn't give us any money. We, visitors coming here like you did today and paying a fee to go see the blinds or buy things in the gift shop or just donate is what we use to do all this work. And it's really important work, and want everybody to know how much we appreciate them helping us out to do this.
Can they go on the website to make a credit card donation?
Oh, you betcha.
All right, then. Thanks a lot, Rob.
You're welcome.
If an early spring Nebraska migration isn't quite in the budget, check out the sanctuary's crane cam at row.audubon.org. You can watch these fascinating creatures any time during their visit. But I'd be willing to bet that this is a trip that'll end up on your bucket list. The fine folks at visitnebraska.com will hook you up with a Nebraska nice kind of time. So tell them I said hi. Until next time, catch up with me over at Instagram at Mel Corbin or on Twitter at MD Corbin. This has been Melissa Corbin wishing you happy travels and stories to last a lifetime.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.